Our First Testament lesson this morning is from Isaiah 62, verses 1 through 5. If you'd like to follow along, it's in your pew Bible on page 692. Please listen for the word of the Lord. For Zion's sake, I will not keep silent, and for Jerusalem's sake, I will not rest until her vindication shines out like the dawn, and her salvation like a burning torch. The nations shall see your vindication, and all the kings your glory, and you shall be called by a new name that the mouth of the Lord will give. You shall be a crown of beauty in the hand of the Lord, and a royal diadem in the hand of your God. You shall no more be termed forsaken, and your land shall no more be termed desolate, but you shall be called, my delight is in her, and your land married. For the Lord delights in you, and your land shall be married. For as a young man marries a young woman, so shall your builder marry you. And as the bridegroom rejoices over the bride, so shall your God rejoice over you. The word of the Lord. Thanks be to God.
Our New Testament text this morning comes from the Gospel of John, the second chapter, verses 1 through 11. On the third day, there was a wedding in Cana of Galilee, and the mother of Jesus was there. Jesus and his disciples had also been invited to the wedding. When the wine gave out, the mother of Jesus said to him, "They have no wine." And Jesus said to her, "Woman, what concern is that to you and to me? My hour has not yet come." His mother said to the servants, "Do whatever he tells you to." Now standing there were six stone water jars for the Jewish rites of purification, each holding 20 or 30 gallons. Jesus said to them, "Fill the jars with water." And they filled them to the brim. He said to them, "Now draw some out and take it to the chief steward." So they took it. When the steward tasted the water that had become wine, he did not know where it came from, though the servants who had drawn the water knew. The servant called the bridegroom and said to him, "Everyone serves the good wine first, and then the inferior wine after the guests have become drunk. But you have saved the good wine until now." Jesus did this, the first of his signs in Cana of Galilee, and revealed his glory, and his disciples believed in him. This is the word of the Lord. Thanks be to God. The party was dying. We had invited about 25 people over to our house to enjoy a delicious 18-pound smoked brisket. My husband Jason had been up since 4 o'clock in the morning babysitting this hunk of meat. And we'd gathered together friends and neighbors and people we barely knew so that we would have enough folks to eat this enormous feast of smoked goodness. Jason had told everyone to be there around 6 o'clock and to bring a side dish. And so people came and they chatted and they hung out for a while until the meat was finished cooking to perfection. But around 8:30, I realized the party was clearly dying. People were hungry, kids were tired, and I had nothing to feed them because the meat wasn't done yet. Finally, someone kindly suggested that we break into the side dishes, and some hot dogs turned up out of somewhere, and we threw them on the grill, and loaves and fishes style, there was enough food for everyone, and the party was saved. And the brisket came off the grill at about 10:30 that night. Lots of leftovers. This is why I truly appreciate and sympathize with the hosts at this wedding party in the Gospel of John, and why I deeply appreciate the miracle that Jesus performed there. A proper Jewish wedding feast was supposed to last 7 days. And horror of horrors, the host has run out of wine before the party is supposed to be over. This would have been the very height of hospitality failure, a major embarrassment with serious social consequences. And the mother of Jesus, as she is known in the Gospel of John, seems to think that Jesus can do something to help. You know, I always wonder what Jesus' mother thought, all that pondering in her heart that we hear about what she thought Jesus could do, what it meant for him to be the Son of God. There are some interesting non-biblical texts that tell stories about Jesus as a child performing some rather exotic miracles. But according to the Gospel of John, this water into wine episode is the first of Jesus' signs or miracles. And it comes at the urging of his mother, who somehow knew that this was in his wheelhouse. Now, like much of the Gospel of John, this story is saturated with symbolic meaning. First, we're told that this happened on the third day. Now, on the one hand, we could hear this simply as chronological storytelling. The Gospel says that on the first day of Jesus' ministry, he called his first disciples. And on the second day, he called Philip and Nathanael, and here we are on the third day. But knowing how John's Gospel is constructed, I'm more inclined to think that we are supposed to draw the obvious connection to the other third day in this larger narrative. Not only did Jesus resurrect a dying wedding party on this third day, he is inaugurating the resurrection of a whole people, the Jewish people, who were like empty jars waiting to be filled to overflowing with that which makes for joy and celebration. These people were dried up from centuries of exile and oppression, occupation and subjugation. Prophets like Isaiah had talked about God's love and desire for Israel in terms of great endearment, as we heard in today's first reading. God rejoices in Israel and calls for praise and celebration, singing and dancing and feasting. This is what Jesus gives to the world in this sign. Not jars filled with wine to keep the dizzy crowd drunk and rowdy, but rather a faith overflowing with joy and goodness. But as is also often the case in the Gospel of John, not everybody gets it. John's Gospel is full of mystery. There are many episodes where people are left scratching their heads at what Jesus says and does. But there are always a few who understand. In this story, there's the steward who assumes the fine wine came from some hidden reserves of the host. He's puzzled that the host would have saved the best wine for last when the wedding guests are too far gone to appreciate it. He misses out on the sign, the miracle, the resurrection. Then there are the guests themselves, who we imagine happily guzzle down this miraculous gift without a clue as to its divine origins. The party went on for the prescribed 7 days, and everybody went home unchanged. Imagine drinking wine that had been miraculously transformed from water by Jesus Christ himself and never knowing it. Imagine perhaps even getting drunk and foolish on that wine and never knowing the difference. What a waste. Then there are the disciples who have only been following Jesus a day or two. They don't really know who Jesus is or even why they're following him. John the Baptist declared him to be the Lamb of God, whatever that means. And Andrew declared him to be the Messiah, but what does he know? Mostly, Jesus just says, follow me and come and see. except for his revelation to Nathaniel that he has some sort of time and space warp vision that allowed him to see Nathaniel sitting under a fig tree. But that's what it took for Nathaniel to be convinced that something good indeed could come out of Galilee, out of Nazareth. Jesus promised Nathaniel would see greater things than that, and here he delivers in this miracle of turning water into wine. The disciples know the source of the gift of this fine wine. They get to really see and experience this miracle. And because of that, we're told they believe in Jesus. They are filled to overflowing like jars of wine. They get a glimpse of the resurrection joy to come. But why are the disciples privileged to witness this miracle and not any of the other wedding guests? Well, the disciples, unlike the average wedding guest, were following Jesus. They were hanging around him, watching his every move. They were expecting something to happen. They were looking for a sign. And they got exactly what they were looking for. Finally, there are the often overlooked servants in this story. We don't hear too much about them. Were they Jewish? We don't know. Did they know anything about Jesus? Probably not. But we are told a couple of important things. One, they did what Jesus told them to do. Household servants weren't necessarily obligated to take orders from just anybody. When Jesus' mother tells them to do whatever he tells them, they could have said, "You know what? Hold on just a minute, lady. I'm going to run this past the master." When Jesus tells them to fill six enormous jars of water used for the Jewish rite of purification, they could have said, "You know what? I'm just going to check with the boss first." That's a lot of water to lug around for no apparent reason. The Jewish rite of purification takes place before the wedding ceremony, so there was no apparent need for those water jars to be filled. But the servants do what Jesus tells them, even though it is difficult, labor-intensive, and seemingly unnecessary. They give Jesus the authority of their master. The second thing that John's story makes very clear is that the servants knew where the wine came from. They saw and experienced the miracle of the water being turned into wine. In fact, they were bearers of that miracle themselves, taking water from the jars and delivering wine to the chief steward. They were privileged to witness and bear this miracle, not because they were following Jesus, not because they were looking for a sign. Purely by grace were they able to witness this resurrecting miracle. So the question that confronts us today is, where are God's miracles? Where are the signs? If Jesus can turn water into wine to save a dying wedding party, why can't he turn sand into AIDS treatment for people in Africa, or rubble into food for starving Syrians? In the face of these obvious deficiencies, it is difficult to see God's abundant grace. But this kind of thinking will lead us to be like the guests at the wedding. They had friends and family who were ill. They were living in a poor backwater town, part of a minority group surviving under the thumb of the Roman Empire. They saw need and they experienced tragedy. And for just a short time, for just 7 days, they came together to celebrate the union of two people, the possibility of new life in their community. And even though they missed the miracle, they were still given this extended experience of joy and celebration. They got a reprieve from the realities of life and death grief and struggle, but they missed the blessing of recognizing the hope for true life, abundant life, that was right there in their midst, right there on their lips. If we are not looking for God's activity, we're likely to miss it. We may enjoy a reprieve from the struggles of life, the weight of tragedy, the burden of sin from time to time. But instead of recognizing in those moments the love and grace of God, we will simply go on as we have, our lives unaltered, still waiting for the world to change and not really expecting anything to happen. Perhaps we could say that it isn't God's job to miraculously heal all of the problems of the world in an instant. We are, after all, the hands and feet of Christ, the stewards of the earth, and there is much more that we can and should do to help those in need. And that is all true and all well and good, but let us not forget that the steward also missed out on the miracle. And that is because he failed to do what the servants did. He was serving the wrong master. If we place our authority in earthly leaders and governments and institutions, things will sometimes work out, but we will miss out on the miracle of it all. If we hold ourselves ultimately responsible for the life of the party, we may be left scratching our heads at the way things work out instead of believing in a gracious God and celebrating God's love and salvation. If instead we are able to live like the disciples, following Jesus, staying by his side, watching his every move, expecting the miraculous, we will not be disappointed. We will recognize God's hand in the resurrected party and the resurrected life. But not everybody is ready to be a disciple. Some of us are still finding our way to Jesus, figuring out who he is and what we believe about him. We may have grown apathetic or disillusioned as we've struggled to reconcile our lot in life or the condition of the world with a God who promises abundant life. We may not be comfortable talking about miracles and signs in the context of hard facts and scientific inquiry, but we can still do what Jesus asks of us. We can still give him authority and serve him. We can do the heavy lifting, the hard labor, even when it doesn't make sense. And by God's grace, through that tedious and sometimes meaningless work, we can be carriers of the miraculous, witnesses to God's wonders. We aren't told that the servants came to believe in Jesus, but we do know that they knew where the wine came from. What they did with that information was up to them. But I'm going to bet that the next time Jesus came to Cana in Galilee, they were on the lookout for what he would do next. And do you know what they would have seen? A miracle much greater than the resurrection of a dying wedding party. When Jesus returns to Cana, he saves the son of a royal official from dying. He goes from bringing life to a dying party, to giving life to a dying child. Wherever Jesus goes, he brings life to parties and to people, to nations and to the world. The signs of God's power, the miracles of God's love are all around us. We can enjoy them, even if we don't recognize them. We can be puzzled by them even as we experience them. Or they can draw us deeper into belief and closer to God. We can watch and wait with expectation or simply do the work of God in spite of our misgivings. Either way, God is at work and is hoping that we will notice. To God be all glory forever and ever.